Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, April 11, 2018. Spokesman for General Paul Malong says the former army chief was not corrupt. And senators grill President Trump's pick for U.S. ambassador to South Sudan in confirmation hearing. We'll bring details on these stories on South Sudan in Focus. The spokesman for President Salva Kiir is alleging that former South Sudan Army Chief Paul Malong is corrupt. Atenywek Ateny told reporters in Juba on Tuesday that Malong has never accounted for millions of dollars given to him to wage military operations against rebel leader Riek Machar.
Malong baftal bunuk belel bank jinu Sudan fata belel gabal kida janetla.
Malong goes to open banks at night. He went to Bank of South Sudan before to get $5 million. He said the money was for operations to fight Riek Machar. These are dossiers we can revisit. And this money was taken. And Riek Machar was not killed. He did not even pursue Riek Machar. Riek Machar did not even see anything tough. And Malong took the money. We, in these coming days, we will take foreign journalists to visit properties owned by those who are accusing the government, and we will see if they are not corrupt, or if they sold their cattle so that they can build skyscrapers in Juba. We will see.
That was President Salva Kiir's spokesman talking to reporters about military secrets of the South Sudan Army earlier yesterday in Juba. He accused the former head of South Sudan Army of corruption. The spokesman for the South Sudan United Front says General Paul Malong is not a corrupt leader. Sandy Dijon says Malong was implementing orders from President Salva Kiir. John is also claiming Malong did not order the Bank of South Sudan to release any amount of money for military operations in South Sudan. John says President Kiir's spokesman Ateny Wek Ateny is not an honest man.
Ateny Wek Ateny is a pathological liar. And the truth is this, the 5 million Ateny Wek Ateny so claimed as of today does not match well with the statement that he has uttered. First of all, if Ateny Wek Ateny was operating from within circles of the government, he would have conformed to the government statement that was early uttered that Riek Machar was the one who attacked J1. And if government has paid for his hit, doesn't Riek Machar have a moral ground to sue the government for that purpose? One. Number two, the money that is said to be 5 million, a figure that is circulating around, was actually money approved by the president, not for the murder of Riek Machar, but for a war that would be staged on Pagak. And the orders were standing. And this money was approved actually when the chief of staff, currently my chairman, General Paul Malong Awan, was in Israel for his personal treatment. When he returned, he had to make a follow-up so that he could attack Pagak as ordered by the commander-in-chief of the armed forces. Eventually, the money could not land into his hand. The right people to be questioned are four in number. One, President Salva Kiir Mayardit deserves to answer on that account. Number two, the minister in the office of the president, Mr. Majid Ayi, would also be answerable to that.
How do you know that he did not cash the money? You were not working in his office.
Of course, I know because I have not been far away from Malong, and currently we are liaising, and I have the right information from him and the other leaders of the movement.
Tell us a little bit more about this money that was meant for operation. You are saying you know more. Tell us more about this money. If it was not cashed, where is it?
When SPLA was fighting with the rebels of Riek Machar, one of the towns that has remained was Pagak, and it was remote and it was out of reach. So the money was approved for the service of the Air Force equipment so that they can reach there without delay.
But the mystery here
is not the question of defense.
No, the mystery
it is
here
a question
is
of facts.
Look,
we are here stating facts. We are not defending anybody.
Can you listen
you
to me?
You know very well, and you have read, according to what has been written, the text has not acknowledged any money, although I'm not seeing it.
Yeah, you have been talking and I've been listening. So would you listen to me to finish my question before you talk? Otherwise, it becomes...
Welcome, Mr. Lanza. Yeah, welcome.
Otherwise, it will become a shouting match. So what I'm asking you is this, that your job as the spokesperson of the South Sudan United Front is to defend your leader. We understand that. But the mystery here is this, that the government is revealing things that the public did not know. And you are here busy defending Malong. Is that fair?
I am not busy defending Malong. It is the government that is telling the public that we are corrupt. It is them that have the money. It is not the defense of Malong. It is just the facts that we are stating. What is the input of Malong? The document before you is stating that Malong has ordered the troops to attack the hideout of Riek Machar. That is acceptable. We acknowledge that. It has happened. Malong has ordered those people. But does that document talk about money?
But the attorney is saying that Malong took the money, asking the government to give him the money so that he can deal with Machar.
Attorney should also provide you with the document that they have issued. The money remained exactly within their office. They are the ones that should answer it.
Attorney is saying Malong went to the bank by himself and took the money.
Malong is not a banker. And bank matters are transacted in a business manner. There is nobody that can go to bank and collect money as such. That is not the way people work. It is quite casual. And if Malong was doing that, what were they doing to handle Malong? Why didn't they arrest him if he was looting the banks?
That's Sande Dijon, spokesman for Paul Malong's new opposition movement called the South Sudan United Front. He was speaking with me this past hour from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. This program made several attempts to speak with Paul Malong, but we were told he is busy in meetings. The United States is one step closer to confirming an ambassador to South Sudan. Thomas Hushik, nominated by U.S. President Donald Trump in August, told a U.S. senator during a nomination hearing held here in Washington today that he's ready for the job despite the complexity of the ongoing conflict in South Sudan. Ayen Deng Bior reports for VOA from Washington.
Senator Cory Booker, a Democrat from New Jersey who has visited South Sudan, told Hushek in today's Senate hearing that he is frustrated with the lack of progress on the peace process in South Sudan.
My concern is compounded, actually, by not only the deterioring effects in South Sudan, but I just feel that we have no articulated strategy to deal with this crisis. And more than that, I have to say, I'm very concerned about this administration's concern about this crisis.
Along with the lack of progress, Booker voices his frustration to Hushek about what he describes as an undermining of U.S. efforts in South Sudan in connection with activities by the government of neighboring Uganda.
According to my notes, so the UN has, UN panels already reported that Uganda supplied Kiir's regime with weapons. And we are giving weapons to the DOD, spent $130 million to train and equip in Uganda. And it's, according to my notes, we've given a pattern of a lot of heavy equipment, including helicopters and ammunition. And there's concerns that they've been transferred from Uganda to South Sudan. Isn't this a serious undermining of our efforts in that area?
Yeah. I don't know that U.S.-supplied weapons have been transferred from Uganda to South Sudan, but the flow, at least through Uganda into South Sudan, of ammunition even is something that has been reported and is needs to be ended. If the idea of the arms embargo or stopping the ammunition and arms flows into the country is in order to reduce the suffering of the victims of the civil war. So, we would, wherever we can find places to put pressure on, we should be doing that.
Two aid workers were killed in South Sudan several days ago, the first this year. The deaths bring the number of humanitarians killed in South Sudan to at least 98, according to the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs. And as Hushek told the senators, the numbers keep rising, making South Sudan the most dangerous place in the world for aid workers. Hushek says he is committed to work toward ending violence against civilians and aid workers.
Mr. Chairman, if confirmed, I will press the leaders of all parties to the conflict in South Sudan, and especially the government, to disavow violence and make the hard compromises necessary to achieve a peaceful resolution of their political differences. I will work tirelessly to urge respect for human rights and fundamental freedoms so that the people of South Sudan might once again aspire to a peaceful and prosperous future. I will work to ensure that America's humanitarian traditions are upheld and our generosity is not squandered.
The State Department has sanctioned certain high-powered individuals in South Sudan, applied a domestic arms embargo, and added restrictions on U.S. companies who do business with the country's oil sector. Hushek tells senators those pressures will not only continue, but they will increase.
Last fall, we took it up to the next level, and we put on sanctions on some people that were at cabinet level positions in the government or equivalents. And the idea is to continue to increase this pressure.
A number of high-level vacancies remain at the State Department. Mike Pompeo is undergoing Senate confirmation hearings to be the next Secretary of State, replacing Rex Tillerson. But there is still no Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs. The Special Envoy to Sudan and South Sudan also remains vacant. Ayan Dengbior, VOA News, Washington.
Traders in Yei are accusing Yei Electricity Cooperative Society and county authorities of mismanaging funds meant to sustain an electric plant. Yei traders and residents want the plant and government agency to be turned over to a private investor so there is no more corruption and power cuts. Daniel Martin reports for VOA from Yei Town.
Yei Town trader Emmanuel Banja claims officials managing Yeiko misappropriated funds they collected from traders and residents to buy the fuel needed to run the plant before fighting spread to Yei in July in 2016. The power plant closed down at the height of the conflict and only reopened last month. In the past, Yei residents would typically have power for more than 12 hours a day. Now, Banja says, blackouts are far more frequent. Speaking in Arabic, Banja calls on Yei River County authorities to fire all Yeiko officials.
Yeiko staffs are stubborn and corrupt. They do not want to be replaced. The management of the facility has been stealing money meant to run it. This time we need to open our eyes and we want the county commissioner to sack all corrupt individuals working for the electricity agency because we don't want to see that electricity goes off again.
Agele Charles operates a small carpentry business in Yei Town. He says despite paying his monthly bills to the electricity provider, he cannot rely on having his power on day or night, something that negatively affects his business.
A business person is working with these timber companies. They normally need this kind of a very good electricity. And if there is no electricity, definitely your business cannot grow. We've been trying to pay when the situation was good and the payment was normal. The more you want to use, the more you will pay for it. I think the prepaid meters will be a very, very good idea if it is really introduced.
Yeiko Chairman Bulen Gwagwe denies his staff has stolen any funds meant to supply electricity to the public. Rather, he says the Yei River Council Authority, some NGOs and members of the public have failed to pay their bills for months. He says electricity consumers owe Yeiko a total of 5 million South Sudanese pounds in unpaid bills. He says that money could have sustained the power plant for the past 2 years since before fighting erupted in the area.
The government should be in the forefront of settling the 3 million that the government department in Yei River County owes Yeiko. We appeal to the NGOs, the individuals, and the churches to settle their loan. And we have them in record. It will give us 5 million Sudanese pounds, which we will utilize to set the process of generating electricity.
Edward Luba heads the business community in Yei and doubts Yeiko is able to provide sustainable power to Yei Town. Speaking in Arabic, Edward suggests the plant be privately run.
Public facilities like the power plant, the market and the park are not managed by the government, but it should be handed over to private investors. I am suggesting that the power plant should be managed by businessmen engaged in the petroleum so they can improve electricity supply to the people.
YECO chairman Gwagwe says the company lacks the funding to buy fuel to run the power plant and warns if funds are not secured soon, Ye Town will run to darkness in the next 10 days. Despite that warning, Ye Town resident Apai Leila says she expects the plant to maintain Ye Hospital and security services.
I'm happy that YECO is back. We have known the benefit of YECO, but after the crisis, YECO is completely out. YECO is also helping us here, doing operations to the patients, and skills-wise is also helping. And then, since YECO is back, we do not pay something. We don't know exactly, is it going to continue like that or not? So we want to YECO to continue so that we will know that there's already improvement and there's peace.
Ye River County Commissioner Justin Leokong admits some government offices owe YECO a significant amount of money in unpaid electricity bills.
Most of the institutions did not pay their bills. They failed to comply to pay the bills of YECO. And as such, YECO collapsed immediately. Because if you know that it was giving us or is up to now giving us services, then you have to comply to pay. Now YECO is demanding huge amounts from the institutions, government institutions, and some individuals. We as a government and then are going to put also this into consideration. Anything that has made YECO not to go ahead, the government is going to look into it.
Ye Electric Power Plant is a community cooperative society established in 2010 with financial support from the U.S. government through the U.S. aid. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday Martin in Ye.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, residents of Dukpadiek reject an appointed county commissioner. Find out why when we come back after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
who in your family do you admire the most and why?
My father, very influential in a very modest and diplomatic way.
One of my uncle, the reason why I admire him most was he's determined and he's the type that likes to share ideas with people.
Well, my wife, because she's my leader, he's the one who gives me what I want from her, for my children, even me also.
I love my young brother because we look like, we resemble, so I love him.
I admire my daddy most because there was a divorce around 6 years and he took care of me throughout up till now.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. A commissioner of Dukpadiek County in Jonglei State has been forced to resign after community members accused him of inciting intercommunal violence. As Jacob Achek reports from Bor, Jonglei State's governor appointed Jacob Akech Dengdit, the Dukpadiek County Commissioner, on March 12 in a gubernatorial decree.
Despite protests from the people of Dukpadiek County, Governor Philip Aguirre sworn in Jacob Akech Dengdit as County Commissioner on March 16. In response, intellectual chief elders and youths in the community met in Bor for 10 days and decided to remove Dengdit on their own. Residents prevented Dengdit from taking up his duty at the county headquarters in Dukpadiek, forcing him to resign on April 6. Governor accepted the former county commissioner's resignation immediately. Benjamin Lam is the Jonglei State Secretary General.
He did resign and he is now appointed as an advisor for youth affairs. The community where he comes is where there was a riot, and that riot led to a community meetings. And in the community meeting, it was resolved for him not to be taken as a commissioner. But he resigned because of the community pressure. Okay. He left the county and he got the position with the government. with the state government.
At a meeting on 24th last week, 5 out of 8 traditional chiefs voted in favor of removing Dengit as county commissioner, while the other 2 wanted him to remain commissioner. Dukfadiet resident Elijah Moinom War says his community resolved to reject the commissioner for the sake of peace and stability in the area. Moinom claimed Dengit incited violence, created divisions, and threatening non-governmental organization of rape in the county.
By 2015, he was appointed as a commissioner of Duke County. Automatically, he failed and he was relieved within 3 months. That failure completely, it has now give the law opinion to the people of Dukfadiet that this one is not a good leader. This is why they are rejecting him. Again, Akej is always inciting community. The community whom he lead always, they are not in peace. He divided people.
And Moinom accused Dengit of spoiling relationship between Dukfadiet and the neighboring Gawer, Law and Nyarwang communities. Speaking in Dinka, Paramount Chief Deng Malwal Mabur said it is up to his state official to decide the matter. But he says Governor Aguirre should appoint someone from the Angaj community as Dukfadiet County Commissioner. He says it is their turn to govern the county.
When the decree was issued, there was no room for Angaj community to claim the position. Following the removal of Akej Dengit in 2015, we came to Jonglei State as all community. We said Akej might not be removed, but we were informed a decree had been issued. Now, when I heard about this new decree appointing Akej, I could not believe it, but it is up to the government to decide who the commissioner should be.
In the resignation letter presented to the governor, Dengit said he had chosen to resign because he respects the popular decisions of his community. He said he was also resigning to allow power sharing among the 5 clans of Ol, Angaj, Pathel, Niel, and Duor. Over the weekend, Governor Aguirre appointed Martin Gumwil from the Angaj clans as the new Dukfadiet County Commissioner. For VOA News, I'm Jacob Achek in Bor.
The recent death of South African icon Winnie Madikizela-Mandela at the age of 81 has awakened memories of the long struggle to end apartheid and achieve equality in the Rainbow Nation. Tributes from South Africans at her memorial service Wednesday did not shy away from her controversial past, even as they underscored the continued importance of her struggle. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
Winnie Madikizela-Mandela, the South African icon who fought tirelessly, visibly, and at great personal cost to bring racial equality to South Africa, is being celebrated with vows that her struggle will continue. Wednesday's somber memorial in Johannesburg was the culmination of at least a dozen memorials held across the nation since her April 2nd death at the age of 81. Madikizela-Mandela, a lifelong activist who served in Parliament for nearly 2 decades, was the second wife of Nelson Mandela, the man seen as the leader of the anti-apartheid struggle, who went on to become South Africa's first black president. The two divorced in 1996 after 38 years of marriage, most of it spent apart during his 27-year term in prison. President Cyril Ramaphosa, who would deliver the eulogy at her state funeral on Saturday, vowed to continue her legacy during a memorial Tuesday in her rural hometown.
Whilst we mourn Umama Winnie for her passing away, we are also here to celebrate her life because it was a life that was well-lived and selflessly dedicated to the improvement of the conditions of others.
Many South Africans, like struggle veteran Kingsley Makubela, regard Madikizela-Mandela as a maternal figure. Makubela spent 9 years in exile as a member of the banned African National Congress and aide to leader Oliver Tambo. When he returned to South Africa in 1990, she cleared a room for him in her Soweto home.
She was like a mother figure to me. When I came back from my exile, I lived with her in her house. And anyone that she regarded as a family, myself included, very protective. So that's how she was as a person.
But she paid a price for her activism, including an 18-month stint in solitary confinement and banishment to a rural town. She was also convicted of kidnapping and being an accessory to assault in the 1989 killing of a 14-year-old anti-apartheid activist who she suspected of being a police informer. Madikizela Mandela's bodyguard was convicted in Stompie Moketsi's murder. Her death has invigorated the ANC Women's League, which Madikizela Mandela led for 10 years. On Wednesday, many women in the crowd at Orlando Stadium in Soweto wore duks, a traditional South African head wrap often worn by Madikizela Mandela. Daughter of slain anti-apartheid activist Chris Hani, Lindiwe Hani, said she helped empower South Africa's women.
There have been so many things said about Umama Winnie this week that honestly I have found quite unpalatable. Whether it's in the media or leaders, even by those that feel they are defending her, Umama Winnie does not need defending. Her actions are the reason that I can stand here as an independent, strong, and unapologetic black woman. Not only did she keep the home fires burning, she collected the wood and she lit that fire. She was fearless.
As the ANC said in a statement, Winnie Madikizela Mandela did not die. She multiplied. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a summary of our stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. The spokesman for President Kiir claims former Army Chief Paul Malong is corrupt. Ateni Wekateni told reporters that General Malong has never accounted for millions of dollars given to him to wage military operations against rebel leader Riek Machar. But the spokesman of the South Sudan United Front insists that Malong is not corrupt. Sunday John says Malong was simply implementing orders from the president. The U.S. is a step closer to confirming an ambassador to South Sudan. Thomas Hushik, nominated by President Donald Trump in August, told U.S. senators in a nomination hearing today he's ready for the job despite the complexities of going into a country like South Sudan. And finally, traders in Ye Town are accusing Ye Electric Cooperative Society and county authorities of mismanaging funds that were meant to sustain the plant. Ye traders and residents want YECO to be turned over to a private investor. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Rara by Tekno. This one talks about greedy politicians.
My country people.
We've been listening to Tekno with the song Rara. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Let us know what you think about this show. You can find us at southsudan@voanews.com. You can also reach us on Facebook. Our Facebook name is South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. It's a big situation.